Welcome, everyone, to episode 396 of the NBA podcast. I'm Brian Toporek, and we have huge news to discuss today. The James Harden trade saga that has been going on for 2+ months now has finally come to an end. He is a member of the Brooklyn Nets in a 4-team mega deal that he pretty much forced the Rockets' hands to do after Tuesday night. So we will get into all sides of this momentarily. Before we get underway, a reminder that you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bios, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. We are being hosted on Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. And we are recording our show today on Locker Room, the only live audio social network for sports fans. Listen to our show on Locker Room before it hits your iTunes feed. Engage with us in real time or start your own room to react to the draft, trade news, and more. Take the mic and download Locker Room in the Apple App Store. Joining me today, as always, is a guy who I can only assume is disappointed that the Sixers didn't pull the trigger on this instead. Morten Jensen, how's it going?
Well, it's going well. It's going well. I think ultimately Philly was the one team that would have made sense for James Harden. I actually wrote a pretty long article yesterday, which I published just a few hours before everything went down. So great timing there, Mort. Basically I looked at all the viable candidates, and they would have to be in the playoff picture, because why would you trade for James Harden if you're not at the very least in the playoff picture? And I just went down the line, you know, I mean, Denver, Dallas, all those teams, and only one team really came up as one where I think he would be a good fit, and that was Philly, simply because you would be under the assumption that Ben Simmons would go the other way, and that means you wouldn't have a primary playmaker. And that's where Harden came in. Otherwise, for every other team, like the Nuggets or Dallas or, you know, the Lakers or everything, they have their playmakers. They have their ball-dominant guys in Luka and Jokic and LeBron. So he just wouldn't really fit in there. And I put Brooklyn in that same category. They have Kyrie, presumably, unless he retires. I don't even know what the hell is going on there.
Right.
And then they have Kevin Durant, who... So far, look, I'm knocking on wood here, and I'm crossing everything that can't be crossed in terms of my fingers and toes and everything, because I like that he looks healthy. I want him to keep being healthy. So he looks like the old Kevin Durant. And here's the big thing for me, and we brought this up last episode. James Harden was only assisted on 15% of his field goals in 2019-2020. I'm not accounting this year because it's just such a small sample size.
Right.
How the hell is he going to just come into that team and be like more amicable to actually change, unless you turn him into the point guard essentially, mm-hmm. and then you actually have Kyrie and KD like float off of him, which I might be able to see some logic in, but no, overall I'm very weirded out by this acquisition.
Yeah, we'll get in the Philly side at the very end here if we have time. And if it makes you feel better about your piece, I was like about to pull the trigger. It's in my drafts in the Forbes CMS on a piece about why the Wizards might be blowing their best shot to trade Bradley Beal. And the whole argument was basically like, well, some team's going to trade for Harden very soon, and that's going to be one major trade package off the market. And I was like, about to hit publish when Shams dropped the news. So I've got a little rejiggering to do sometime this weekend, but there will be some sort of Bradley Beal trade piece for me in the coming days. And before we get into the Brooklyn stuff in particular, just a reminder that we are being sponsored by Manscaped. So if you want 20% off and free shipping, go to manscaped.com and use the code NBAPOD, that's NBAPOD, 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com and use the code NBAPOD. Your balls will thank you. And you know what? We might need to send something to James Harden, because he's looking a little ungroomed lately, all over. Both.
That's true.
Both in the face and the body, you know, who knows what's going on there. But yeah, let's...
We should censor the entire Nets, though. Because look, none of them are going to have clean balls for a long time, because everyone is going to be trying to share it, and that means that those balls are going to have scratches on it and everything. It's not
clean. And they're in Brooklyn. I mean, this is just you know, it's what you do up there. You grow your face out, who knows? So Brooklyn, let's get into the on-court fit, and then we'll talk about the price that they gave up for him. So,
okay.
So, I mean, I share some of your same concerns, and I think that's been the kind of running question after, really, since the first trade rumors came out about Harden mm-hmm. wanting to go to Brooklyn was, there's only one ball. You know, these guys are all super, super elite scorers. Like, there's no concern about, like, are they going to have the 25th ranked offense? You know, if they figure this thing out, they're going to have a top five, if not the league's best offense. But
agreed.
But yeah, how do you see it working with all three of them once all three are back in the lineup, whenever that may be?
Right. I, presuming that Kyrie hasn't retired, yes, I would absolutely say that it they need to figure out, you know, that dynamic right there with Harden and Kyrie. I think that's the worst one, because as we've seen with Kevin Durant, he is very able to play off the ball a lot. Mm-hmm. I think he actually has the capability of being a guy who understands what he can do without having the ball in his hands all the time. So I don't think he's as big of an issue. Like, yes, sometimes he will have to have possessions and where he handles the ball and creates something off his own. Yes, absolutely. But he doesn't need to the same extent as someone like Harden. So you can sort of slide him a little bit off the ball. Kyrie, though. Kyrie loves the 20 seconds, let me herky-jerky dribble around five guys and end with a reverse layup possessions. He loves those. So does Harden, with the different outcome of him stepping back from three. So it comes down to how do those two guys get along in terms of touches and mm-hmm. on-ball presence, and you know how many times are they going to be able to share the court without some sort of overlap where one of them is standing still. And it really comes down to Steve. I think Steve Nash is in a tough spot. This is, after all, a rookie coach. Yeah. I understand his pedigree as a player, but he's a rookie coach. Never coached before, and now he's going to be juggling three tremendous egos and three tremendously talented players, which, you know, that's obviously the most important thing here. But can he get them on the same page in terms of sharing the basketball? Can he get them on the same page, especially with James Harden, and go, sometimes, man, you just need to be an active player, you know, when others have the rock, to space the court. Like, that was one of the issues that Chris Paul had back in the day in Houston. That was, you know, you're not putting yourself in a position to help us. Like, you're a great three-point shooter, high-volume three-point shooter, but when I have the ball, I'm trying to create something. You're just standing there with the hands on your hip and not doing jack. Like, Harden has to change his body language. He has to change his engagement. He has to change the way he, you know, attacks the game when he doesn't have the ball in his hands. I think that's very fair to say. And unless he does that, you know, this could get really ugly. Mm-hmm. But on the flip side, if he does come into Brooklyn and he just goes, you know what, I'm all about team right now. Great. Great. Every concern goes out of the book.
Right. I mean, we've seen him work with Chris Paul in recent years and Russell Westbrook last year. So he has played along ball dominant point guards in the past two or three years. But yeah, he hasn't had a ball dominant point guard and a Kevin Durant on his team. So I think it's fair to be not concerned necessarily, but at least curious to see how all of that fits. I mean, the good thing for the Nets is that they do have Mike D'Antoni on their coaching staff, who has plenty of experience with James Harden, and I think the Nets must be thanking their lucky stars right now that they have Mike D'Antoni with his experience, especially for first-time head coach Steve Nash, so that should help. You know, I think the other question really coming into the season for the Nets was about their defense, and now that they've traded Jared Allen, who was their best rim protector by far, I think that's even more of a question, because, you know, a starting backcourt of Kyrie Irving and James Harden looks like barbecue chicken to most.
Oh, I have thoughts.
Okay,
I have takes on this.
Give me.
Yeah, look. One thing is the offense. We can talk about like the three-headed dynamo of Harden, Irving, and Durant as much as you want. But when I saw, you know, the fact that Jared Allen was moved out, which, you know, we all anticipated this.
Right.
The first thing that came to mind was, oh my God, they're going to ask more of KD right now.
Mm.
They're going to ask of him to become the defender that he was in Golden State now.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to ask him to be more of a rim protector. They're going to ask him to switch onto bigger players. And you know what? I wouldn't push my luck. This is still a guy who came off one of the most horrendous injuries that you can have as a professional athlete, especially in basketball. I understand he's played tremendously, but let's not add to his burden. I don't think that's the play, right? I mean, could you just imagine if you ended up in a situation where you just gave him too much responsibility and his body crumbled as a result of it? That would be catastrophic.
Yeah. And I mean, he is probably the best defender on the team now. I mean,
there's no probably about it.
And
who else?
You're going to put him in a position. Like, here's what I keep coming back to. And we can talk about the price here as well.
Mm.
I think this does increase their odds of winning a championship in the next 2 years. Like, if everything breaks right, just having those three guys, you know, two MVP candidates and an all-star, like, it raises their ceiling. And I would argue it raises their floor, too, because as you referenced, we don't know what's up with Kyrie right now. He's been out because of personal reasons for more than a week. It's unclear when he's coming back. You know, there was the video circulating of him maskless at a family member's birthday party that the NBA is investigating. It sounds like he's not going to be back this week, at least, because the NBA is seeing whether he violated COVID protocols. I don't want to speculate about what's going on with him, when he's going to be back, whatever. In the meantime, bringing in James Harden at least, you know, doesn't force Kevin Durant to play 38 minutes a night, which is good.
Right.
But when I look at a hypothetical matchup against the Milwaukee Bucks in the Eastern Conference Finals or against the Lakers in the NBA Finals, let's take the Bucks. Like, the Bucks have three elite defenders in,
yeah.
I mean, more than that, because Brook Lopez, I think you can also include, but three guys who match up pretty well, Giannis, Chris Middleton, Drew Holiday. You know, you could put those three guys in some combination on KD, Harden, Kyrie.
Yeah.
I don't think the same is true inverse. I don't think, you know, KD is going to be on Giannis and then, like, Harden or Kyrie is going to be on Drew. And so, like, who's guarding Middleton now that Torian Prince is gone and Caris LeVert's gone?
Yeah.
I don't have a good answer. And then, you know, look at the Lakers in the finals. All right, cool. We've got LeBron and AD. I guess KD could go on LeBron. He's done it in past finals. But who on this team is guarding Anthony Davis?
Yeah, no one. You have to put KD on AD.
And then who's guarding LeBron? James Harden?
Yeah, probably.
Oh,
which is
boy.
Like, no. I'm saying there's no right answer here because it's all wrong.
Right. And I don't want to jump to conclusions here because I don't know that the Nets are necessarily a finished product. I think they'll rely on the buyout market for sure. But, you know, they traded so much draft equity in particular. They traded 3 first-round picks, 4 first-round swaps. So they cannot trade a pick after, you know, once this upcoming draft happens, they could trade the 2028 pick, but like between now and the start of the new league year, they are not allowed to trade a first round pick of any sort. They have Landry Shamet, I guess, is their one remaining trade chip. Like, Spencer Dinwiddie has next to zero value now that he's out for most of if not all of the year. I mean Timothy Luau-Cabarro, Bruce Brown, maybe. Like, they just don't have a ton of guys who they can dangle if they're trying to upgrade. If they realize, you know, we're relying on DeAndre Jordan as our primary center. We don't have a guy to guard AD. How do we fix this? I don't know that they have a good way to do so.
I would agree. And in terms of the draft picks, I think it was an overpay.
Yeah. I mean, that's where I'm at, too. I don't... I guess my fundamental question with this is, given the downside, the potential downside of this, like, all three of these guys are only signed through 2022. They all have player options after that. Do they have to win at least one title in the next 2 years to justify this cost?
See, I don't think we can look at it that way. I mean, from the Nets perspective, yes.
Yeah.
But here's the thing, and this is what bothers me that no one is really talking about. Look at the personalities of the three people that they have on the roster. Kyrie Irving is entirely unpredictable.
Right.
If he, you know, he moves like the wind changes. So if he sticks around, you know, until 2022, like unless he wants to trade or something, he could easily leave that year. Like he told the Celtics crowd, during the opener a couple years back, I'm going to re-sign. No, he sure as hell didn't. He can leave, and that can change on a whim. KD as well is not one of those guys who is super calculated necessarily. I don't mean that as a negative thing, but he's not. He can also get offended or annoyed. Like apparently Draymond Green's presence was enough to push him out of Golden State.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so again, if those three guys don't click, KD could be like, you know what, F this, I'm out.
Right.
And then James Harden is James Harden, right? If those two guys leave, he's going to be looking at it and go, oh, this is Houston 2.0. I don't want to be here. Bye. I would say if you sacrifice all that, you know, first-round capital, absolutely, you're in a win-now situation right now. I'm putting all the pressure on Brooklyn. Usually, I would like to give teams some run and like say, no, you know what? It's not a win-now necessarily.
Mm-hmm.
But look, when a team gives up that much, like last year's Clippers, when Paul George was like, no, it's not a win now.
Right.
Like, bull. Like, I understand where he came from, and I understand that they had another year, particularly this year, to kind of rectify what happened. But no, last year was absolutely a win now. Mm-hmm. Look at what the Clippers sacrificed to get him on board, him and you know, in extension Kawhi. Yes, of course they have to win now. And now that the Nets have virtually no other trace assets whatsoever, they need to win now. If they come up short in the playoffs this year, hellfire should rain upon them from the media perspective. Absolutely it should.
Oh, like, it will. It definitely will.
And it should. And it should. I wouldn't complain whatsoever if you know, Nets fans went out and said, you know, this is not okay, and we're going to have a 4-month media criticism extravaganza, because look at the players that you have, look at what you relinquished. That means you're all in, and to a, in my opinion, perverse extent.
Yeah.
So I think this was an overpay. But look, again, Brian, you know what? I'm being naive. I'm being too negative as well, because look. When has it ever gone wrong for Brooklyn when they traded a bunch of draft picks? When has it ever gone wrong?
Right. Well, I mean, you know, at least these guys, like, all of them are still in their prime. This is not trading for a wash-up Paul Pierce and Kevin Garnett. But yeah, that is the downside. I mean, I think the phrase championship or bust gets thrown around a little too often, because it's like, well, what does the bust mean? For Brooklyn, the bust means these guys either walk away or, like, again, who knows what's up with Kyrie? Like, maybe he just walks away from basketball in general. You know, one of them gets hurt and they just don't have the depth to make up for that loss. And then, like, okay, they gave up a 2021 first round swap that, barring an absolute catastrophe, is not coming into play. So, you know, that you can almost take that off the table. Again, an unprotected 2022 first rounder, barring a catastrophe, probably going to be in the 20s, somewhere in the 20s. But
maybe. Again, anything can happen over the course of a year and a half.
Right. But then, I mean, they gave up unprotected 2024 and 2026, and then Houston has the right to swap 23, 25, 27. You know, get to the middle of this decade, and it's going to be really interesting to reflect back on this trade. Because, yeah, I mean, that's the downside more. The downside is they're the Nets of the mid-2010s again, and they are just so hopelessly lost that it's going to take a decade for them to dig their way out.
Right. That's, you know what, this might be a little bit hot takey, but I think the most dangerous thing they relinquished here are the swaps. It could have the most dramatic effects. It really could. Simply because in 2023, 2025, and 2027, if the Nets just suck at that point, the Rockets are going to go, thank you very much for the number five overall pick. Thank you very much for the number two overall pick. Hey, thank you very much for the number one overall pick. And they are going to be put back in the line, and they have to do what Sean Marks did initially was, let's figure out a way to get assets and get back on this train by just waiting it out. Like, God, it just has this uneasy feeling when I look at the pick swaps. It really is not great. They would have to hit on, the picks that they then keep if they're bad, which could be really late picks.
Right.
And they would have to just make the most of those. So they are going to have first rounders, but it's an uphill battle of hitting right on those.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. All right, let's go into the Rockets side of this now, Mort. Mm-hmm. So they get all of these picks, and then this got expanded into a four-team trade. So the Nets sent out Caris LeVert, Jared Allen, Taurean Prince, and Rodion Skuric. They ended up, at first it seemed like LeVert was going to the Rockets, but then out of nowhere, like Shams 5 minutes after he breaks the news of this trade originally, he's like, oh, by the way, Victor Oladipo is going to the Rockets for Caris LeVert as well.
So
the Rockets get Oladipo, Exum, Kurux, and then all of the picks plus a 2022 Milwaukee first. From Cleveland, huge draft haul for the Rockets. Mm-hmm. But what do you think of specifically the LeVert Oladipo flip?
I am absolutely shocked that the Pacers decided to do this. Just in terms of what they got in return.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the thing for me. So I think they did Victor Oladipo a favor, which I can appreciate. That is going to carry some weight for agents and players, because apparently Oladipo had wanted out. He told them on the download, you know what, I'm going to play my heart out for you guys, but I want to be moved. Which, by the way, respect Victor Oladipo for doing that. That was way more mature than James Harden's antics.
Because we
should come back to this at some point, but DeMarcus Cousins unleashed on James Harden and his behavior, which I'm applauding, which is also part of why I'm a little bit down on the whole Harden angle for Brooklyn. But okay, Oladipo wanted to just get on with it. He wanted a fresh start, I think. I don't think he's going to get it in Houston, to be honest with you, but that's besides the point. I was surprised that this was everything that they could muster, the Pacers. I mean, they get a second rounder and Caris LeVert, and LeVert is, decent? Like, okay. I don't think we've seen prolonged play from him that indicates that he is, a top two player on a team. Is that fair to say?
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
Yeah. Okay. So I was a little bit surprised that the Pacers didn't get more. But then, of course, there's the injury concerns. There's also the fact that he's up for a new contract soon. Yep. Oladipo, that is. So I get it in context, but I was hoping for more for the Pacers. The big winners for me was, Cleveland. My God. Outside of the Rockets, of course, considering what they got. But Jared Allen they got. To go with Colin Sexton, Darius Garland, Isaac Okoro. Cleveland has a young core now, man.
Yeah, I want to get back to Cleveland a little bit later, but
okay.
for the Rockets, I mean, I guess my question for them is, what's the plan with Oladipo now? Do they plan to re-sign him in 2021? Were they just not that high on Caris LeVert, who is under contract for two more years after this? I mean, I think in a vacuum, assuming Victor Oladipo stays healthy, he's the better player. And they didn't give up that much, gave up LeVert and I think a second round pick to get him. So I like it from a value perspective. I'm just kind of curious, what what they're actually planning to do. I mean, I guess they're planning to stay competitive because I think, you know, a roster with Oladipo, John Wall, Christian Wood, PJ Tucker, Boogie, they'll be, I don't think they're like bad enough to tank, assuming everyone stays healthy. I mean, I think they, you know, they could still stay in the mix for the play-in tournament there. And I think just having the cancerous environment in their locker room, we saw it spill out Tuesday night publicly, you know, where Harden just is like, basically, we suck and I don't think we can fix it. And then, you know, John Wall right afterward was like putting him on blast and saying, you know, dude, it's been 9 games. Like, you're mailing it in, shape up. And, you know, as you referenced, Cousins the next day also had some choice words for Harden. And it's basically, like, I don't want to say, I want to put these words in their mouths, but they more or less said he quit on the team.
Yeah. No, they did. They absolutely did.
And Victor Oladipo won't, because he's playing for a new contract. If nothing else, I mean, he might be upset that he's not going to a contender, but regardless, he has a lot of money on the table this year. He needs to play well.
No, but he's also not wired that way.
Yeah, right. I mean, because if he was, he would have done the same thing in Indiana. Like, he also wanted out, but he didn't. I mean, he's been a good soldier, and he just kind of realized, like, look, I'm up for a new contract this year. If I act out in this way, teams are probably going to have some questions about me moving forward.
Mm. I have a question for you.
Yeah.
If all it took to get Victor Oladipo.
Yeah.
You know where I'm going here.
Yeah.
Why not? Why wouldn't Brooklyn just say, you know what, Indiana, take Caris LeVert. And you know what? Hell with it. Take a first rounder, since we're apparently doling them out like candy. Take a first rounder instead of a second rounder. Let's get Victor Oladipo in there. Kyrie, Victor Oladipo, Kevin Durant. And still, you have your draft picks. You have, you know, Jared Allen. You have Torian Prince too, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a good question.
Wouldn't you rather have Victor Oladipo and then all the trade assets?
Yeah, I think given the price that you gave up for Harden, yes. Mm-hmm. I mean, Harden is a much better player than Victor Oladipo, and he doesn't come with the health concerns that Oladipo does. So that might have been part of it for Brooklyn. And maybe Brooklyn just isn't super high on the potential fit between Irving, Durant, and Oladipo because,
you know, they don't like defense?
Well, clearly not. But also, I mean, Oladipo is going to be another high usage guy, not as much as Harden, but still you're taking the ball out of Durant and Kyrie's hands. And is he the type of talent that justifies that? Or, you know, are you just kind of forcing this, like, weird mix of these three guys and, you know...
Can I push back on that a little bit?
Yeah, for sure.
He was assisted, Oladipo that is, on almost 58% of his field goals this year.
Yeah, I mean, he fits better into a team construct than Harden does. Yeah. Like, he is less... I think the word that Seth Partnow always uses is heliocentric. Like, you don't have to build your entire team around Victor Oladipo the same way that you do James Harden, which is
nice.
That's
a good term. I should have used that term in the article I wrote yesterday. That's a good term. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, I get it, but at the same time, like, what's his usage rate is still, you know, he was at 26.7% this year for the Pacers, and that's with Sabonis being as high usage as he is as well. So it's, you know, he is still going to have the ball in his hands a lot regardless. And, like, maybe they don't believe in him. That three-point shot is not nearly as reliable as Harden's. And maybe they don't believe in him as an individual creator. Like, once we get into the conference finals, NBA finals level, is Victor Oladipo the caliber of player that we can count on to create offense for himself and others? We know James Harden is that type of player. But again, factoring in the price, I think you're right to question, if that's all it took, why go, you know, give up 6 picks plus Jared Allen plus Torian Prince? That's where it starts to get a little fuzzy for me too.
Yeah. especially if it turns out that Oladipo is back like to what he used to be, which right now it looks like. I'm still a little bit skeptical because it's a super small sample size of 9 games. Mm-hmm. So I'm not ready to go that far yet, but good Lord, I think they missed out on a perfectly fine alternative there. I wouldn't have been as worried about the usage rate. Like, you know, they're getting a guy in there right now with like double that usage rate.
Right.
So that's not really my big concern. I think he would have rounded out the roster pretty well as a defender and as a secondary creator. And he's a pretty good passer too. I'm not saying he's James Harden. He's clearly not a playmaker of Harden's caliber or an offensive player in general as Harden's caliber. But defensively, he's like twice the player. So. I don't know. It's roster construction is funny. I do think the name James Harden carried more weight now than it probably should have, because you and I are talking about health as well and like non-injuries, and you're right. James Harden has not had, if memory serves, a single long-term injury during the course of his career, right? He's been profoundly healthy.
He's missed very little time throughout his entire Houston tenure. I mean, 68 games last season was the fewest played, but that's because the season got cut off.
Exactly.
Yeah, he only missed 4 games, I think, last year. So he's played 72, at least 72 in each of the prior 7 seasons.
Yeah. No, he's played a ton of games. He's available. And again, health is skill, so good on him.
Right.
That said, and we've talked about this before, when you just look at the regular season, he's approaching very quickly 30,000 career minutes. Mm-hmm. And then when you go to the playoffs, it's 4,500 minutes. That's a lot of wear and tear on those legs, especially when you compound it with a high usage rate and all the offensive responsibility that he's had. The amount of free throws, the punishment he's taken over the years in getting to the free throw line as well. I'm just saying I'm trying to play devil's advocate here a little bit, as you can tell. But we can touch on health for our other players as an argument, but are we sure that James Harden is going to be, James Harden in 2 years?
Right. From the Nets' perspective as well, maybe they weren't feeling, Oladipo is going to be a free agent this summer.
Right.
There have been a lot of guys who were supposed to be free agents this summer that have since signed extensions. So teams were lining up, summer of Giannis, summer of, it's Kawhi is still going to be on the market as far as we know. But Paul George is off, Giannis is off, Bam, Tatum, Donovan Mitchell's off. A lot of guys like Rudy Gobert is off. Drew Holiday might be once he becomes eligible for a bigger extension at the end of February. So there are going to be a lot of teams with cap space that suddenly don't have primo targets other than Kawhi. Yep. So that could lead to that next tier of player getting overpaid. So maybe the Nets are looking at the overall NBA landscape and saying, well, okay, Victor Oladipo, if he keeps playing this well, is getting max or near max money. We don't feel good about giving him that type of contract, where even though James Harden's going to be 33 in 2022, we're more willing to bet on him aging well than we are Victor Oladipo.
Yeah. No, that's entirely fair, if that's the case. But
yeah.
I think I found a way to phrase this properly. I think the list of what needs to go right is longer than what needs to go wrong.
Yeah, oh, for sure.
And that, I think that's a problem, because you look at just the cohesiveness of Harden, Irving, and KD, and you don't really know if that's going to float. And then after that hurdle, there are a lot of minutes on both Harden and KD, honestly, and there's also the injury concern for KD's sake. So those two are sort of like potential long-term issues. Mm-hmm. And then you just have Kyrie, who might not want to play basketball at some point anymore.
Right,
who could retire 2 weeks from now. It's just such a long list of things that have to go right, and you just put everything into it. You just took your entire fortune, your house, your car, your wife and your kids, and you bet it all on black.
Yeah.
And it's just, okay, that's takes balls. Definitely takes balls. So, you know, definitely get a Manscaped kit.
Sean Marks, you're getting one too.
Yeah, you're getting one now. But I see so many avenues where this go wrong. And I know that I'm coming off as a pessimist. Let me just clarify something real quickly here. I hope that it doesn't. I hope that it doesn't go wrong. I actually hate this deal for Brooklyn, but I hope I'm wrong. I frequently hope I'm wrong when it comes to these things, because
with Brooklyn in particular,
yeah, like it would be better off, in the NBA would be better off if this team functioned. It would like and everyone else. I always hope the players come in and play their best, and they don't age, and everything's stays the same. That'd be great. I just see a laundry list of things that could go wrong, and I'm very, very worried. Hey, look, can we talk about this from the Pacers? The Pacers might have, well, them and the Cavs might just have taken like the most secure moves, like in terms of what they got back. Like, you're pretty certain that Caris LeVert has a decent floor. He might not be, a high ceiling player necessarily, but like, you know that you're getting a certain level of production out of him. The same goes with Cleveland and Jared Allen, and even Taurean Prince. And what did you give up? You gave up, if you're the Cavs, you gave up Dante Exum and the first rounder via Milwaukee, which is going to be super low. I wouldn't even say there are risks there. There's no laundry list of what could go wrong there. It's very thorough, secure traits that I don't feel there's any downside to.
Yeah, I think for both of those teams, there's probably less upside than there is with either Brooklyn or Houston, but there is far less downside.
Yeah, yeah. Jared Allen, so do you think with the Cavs, though? Don't you think Jared Allen has more in his tank than what he has shown, given like the amount of times they've limited his minutes?
Yeah, but like Brooklyn, the upside is you win the title each of the next 2 years.
Right,
Houston, the upside is Brooklyn falls apart and you get top five picks for five straight years from 23 through 27. So
okay, yeah.
Yeah, before we pivot into Cleveland, because I do want to talk about them, my fundamental question for Houston, I think, is did they get enough for James Harden, or, Philly is the other team that was in negotiations with them. We'll get to them later, but Ben Simmons was on the table. I don't know how much else was. There were a lot of reports flying around yesterday. Stein reported that they wanted a package centered around Simmons and Tyrese Maxey. Chris Haynes of Yahoo Sports said they also wanted Matisse Thybulle. So I don't know how many picks they wanted on top of that. I think that's kind of where the talks broke down for them in Philly, but overall, there's a chance that like Brooklyn stays good, or if this thing falls apart, they end up trading Kyrie and replenishing their depth, and then they build around Durant and Harden moving forward, and that none of those picks necessarily turn out. So, from Houston's perspective, would you have rather gambled on a Simmons-centric package or on a Nets implosion?
Nets implosion.
Yeah, I think so too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's not to say that it is hard to turn down an offer that includes Ben Simmons. I'm not even going to front on that. Ben Simmons is like a game-changing defender, formidable rebounder, great passer. But, man, I don't want to go into this whole thing because this is a Harden episode. It's not a Simmons episode. But there is a ceiling now on his offense. I'm no longer in the camp that goes, oh, he's going to get better as an offensive player. It might be like gradually, but he is never going to be the offensive player I think that we're all hoping that he could be. Not just in terms of shooting, but he's just so damn relaxed. He's not aggressive when he needs to be. Like, he's passing up driving lanes. There are so many times where he doesn't really fully understand that he's 6'10", 240, superbly athletic, and with great ball handling. He can get to the cup 17 times a game and see if he wants to, and he settles for like 6 sometimes because it's like, oh, I just want to make the right play. I want to pass. Like, dude, stop, just be dominant. And then you could make the argument, well, maybe a change of team would have opened that up, but I'm not sure. I think he's just wired in a certain way, and that's not a criticism of him as a player overall, solely his offensive capabilities, because defensively, for some reason, he's aggressive as hell and extremely, extremely impactful. But yeah, no, I'm betting on a Nets implosion instead. I think it's the it's the safer play, as harsh as that sounds.
Yeah, no, I'm right with you. I mean, not that they should be factoring John Wall into their long-term team-building plans anyway, but for the next few seasons, a team built around Wall, Simmons, and Christian Wood, I just don't see how that rises to the level of even like a real threat in the West.
Right.
So by the time you've really started to be able to build a team around Simmons, you know, you're already getting into... Oh, okay, you know, he signed for 5 years. Like, we're already in year three or four of his deal before we even really start to get to that point. And, right. I mean, you're right, offensively with him. Like, it just might not happen. Like, we hope. I mean, you know, the LeBron James comparisons are always unfair to anyone. Like, he got slapped with those, and Magic Johnson as well. I don't even know if he's going to get to Magic's level offensively. Like, LeBron's out. It's just not going to happen.
Yeah.
But, you know, Magic, I think, is the ceiling at this point, and I don't know that it's there. So, yeah, I'm with you. I think there is some downside to this. Again, I mean, Brooklyn could either just be good for a while or trade one of these stars and replenish their depth and, you know, re-tinker around the other two. Like, there's a chance that this really backfires on Houston, and Victor Oladipo walks this offseason, and they have, like, nothing to show for James Harden except a bunch of picks in the 20s. But there's also, you know, the chance that, like, as you said earlier, like, that this is KG Paul Pierce part two. And, you know, 3 or 4 years down the line, Houston's getting top five picks and getting Jason Tatum's and Jaylen Brown's into the mix that they shouldn't have any business getting because Brooklyn has imploded.
Right, and you know what? Since the team will still be owned by Tilmer Fertitta,
they're
probably going to waste those opportunities as is, right?
Yeah, just sell the picks.
Right, because then when those guys are up for extensions, they'll just be like, nope, let's trade it. Let's trade it. And it's just going to be this perpetual cycle of saving money. Now, look, it's just overall, I'm not optimistic about the Nets. I'm not super optimistic about how the Rockets handle those assets, as I just outlined. I look at the Pacers and Cavs and I just go, good on you. Okay. Like, the Pacers just did not get a whole lot for deeper, but I understand it. Yeah. One question I do have, though, is do you think there is a world wherein you can actually flip Oladipo near the trade deadline for more than what he got from the Pacers package? I'm not saying that the Rockets have the personnel to flip him and you know like a flip house or anything and get a major profit out of it, but if he plays well for the rest of January, February, March 25th.
Yep.
So he has 2.5 good months,
mm-hmm.
and like a really good play. Could they pull, you know, an Oklahoma City thing where they just they flip him for something really good?
I think it's certainly possible. Yeah. I mean, again, it comes down to your eval on Caris LeVert, who we'll get to in a bit, in terms of whether you think that, like, is an unprotected first round pick in this draft more valuable than Caris LeVert on a 3-year deal?
Yes.
So then, I mean, I think there's certainly a chance that they could flip him for something good. I mean, I guess we have to find the team with that sort of need because, you know, I mean, the top contenders now, Clippers, Lakers, Milwaukee, Brooklyn, have all traded away most of their available draft picks for the near future. So they're all probably limited in what they could acquire. I mean, Boston's always out there, ready to almost trade for someone. Miami's lurking as well. I don't think Oladipo is the type of player that Philly would go after, but never underestimate Daryl Morey.
Wait, back up a little bit, because I was just wrapping my head around that Boston.
Yeah, Boston's always there.
Victor Oladipo as, like, the Hayward replacement. So basically, you trot out, well, when or if he's healthy, Kemba, and if not him, Marcus Smart, mm-hmm. then Oladipo, Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, and probably Tice or Robert Williams, depending on where you're at. That's something, right? I mean, that is, like, you get a three-headed wing trio, all with great defensive capabilities, all of whom can create on the ball, off the ball, all of them can hit a three-point shot. That's dangerous, man. I kind of like that.
They have that massive trade exception, too.
They do. Yeah. Oh, that. See, that's a good point, because you can actually offer for Tita immediate cap relief.
Yeah. Yeah. Offer this year's first round pick, Peyton Pritchard, Aaron Nesmith, who, like, Carson Edwards.
Yeah, whatever. Like, whatever.
Yeah, Grant Williams. Oh, any of the young guys.
Boston, get in on this immediately.
Yeah, I mean, from Boston's perspective, the question would be whether they're willing to re-sign Oladipo and go way into the luxury tax, because they still have Brown, Tatum, Kemba on the books as well. But
no, but how old is he? Like, let's because why wouldn't they if he's good? Like, what is Oladipo? Is he 28?
He's 28, turning 29 in May.
Oh, he's a little bit older than I thought. So that means he's still, you know, he doesn't fit age-wise necessarily with Brown and Tatum, but, like, he's still young enough. He's not Kemba age. He's not Gordon right. Hayward age. Like,
yeah.
If they re-sign him for 4 years at the age of 29, he'll be 33. Okay, that's a little bit on the old side, but, like, if they then lessen his usage rate, you could squeeze out some additional good years from him. Like, is that a bad plan?
No, I mean, I think he makes, honestly, he's probably makes more sense for them than anywhere else because of the trade exception and because they probably do have, you know, that could elevate them into the legit contender tier. I think they're probably looking at this Brooklyn move and saying, like, uh-oh, you know, that we made it to the Eastern Conference Finals and we realistically thought we were going to, we probably should have made it to the finals last year, and now, you know, Milwaukee and Brooklyn, I think you could make an argument, are ahead of them. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that could be the type of move that puts them into that tier as well.
I'm noting down that I need to write a Forbes article today.
There you go. Yeah. Well, I mean, I think, you know, going back to your fundamental question of, can the Rockets flip Oladipo? I think yes, and I think they should if they aren't planning to re-sign him.
Right. And that follows me into something else here, just because I need to. If they do that, and Christian Wood becomes their primary player, right?
Uh-huh.
You know, he's currently averaging 22.5 points, almost 10 rebounds, a block and a half. Yeah, we could be looking at Christian Wood down the line, you know, all-star.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Christian Wood's been fantastic.
I wonder if there's someone out there in, like, the NBA landscape, you know, a writer, pundit, a podcaster maybe, that just kind of sought him out in good time and said, this guy's going to be good. Let me camp for this guy. I wonder if someone is out there like that.
What, 1 year too early, unfortunately.
Well, doesn't that just prove that I'm light years ahead?
Call Bob Myers, get him on the phone. You tell him you're ready for a job. Yeah,
I am certainly ready for a job.
All right. Well, since you have been desperate to talk about Cleveland, and I agree with you. I mean, yes. I think Cleveland, like, low key right now might be, I don't want to say the biggest winner of the trade, because Brooklyn, I think, right, assuming everything goes right, Brooklyn's going to win this trade short term. Houston's probably going to win this trade long term. But in terms of what went out versus what came in, I'm speechless. It's like, how did you get into this trade and be like, here, I'll give you a nickel and you'll give me $3?
Yeah. Yeah.
Because you're right. They traded an injured Dante Exum and a 2022 pick from Milwaukee, which now that Giannis is re-signed is going to most likely be in the late 20s. And they get Jarrett Allen, who's going to be a restricted free agent this offseason. And they get Taurean Prince, who is a good rotation player.
Mm-hmm.
Jarrett Allen just kind of solves their conundrum. Like, you know, Andre Drummond's going to be an unrestricted free agent.
Yeah, there you go. Yep.
This offseason. And, you know, the Cavs didn't give up hardly anything to get him. I mean, letting him walk is not a huge issue. And, you know, to his credit, he's been playing well so far this year. 18 points, 15 rebounds, a steal, 1.6 steals, 1.5 blocks. So I'm not saying they should necessarily let him walk, but he's also very much in that old school center mold. You know,
but you're missing a point here. They can flip him. Now they can trade Andre Drummond and get something for him, even if it's like a second rounder and an expiring contract.
Well, Boston, again, given their needs for a center.
Yeah, so I have taken the temperature on the Andre Drummond to Boston train at least a few times over the past couple of years. Uh-huh. And there is, like, negative interest from Boston fans. Yeah, they are not on the Andre Drummond wagon, like, at all.
They weren't on the Miles Turner wagon either, and how'd that turn out?
That's true. That is true. But that said, it's, you know, they are looking at the whole wings, and then center is not that important as long as you can play defense. And Drummond, you know, is still a high-volume offensive player, which I don't think necessarily makes a lot of sense for Boston. But no, I mean, you're right. But if they get them for virtually nothing and they can just let him go after the season and not re-sign him, like, okay, fine. That's certainly an option. Yeah, but I'm just saying that the Cavs could get something for him and then just hand all the minutes to Jared Allen and go, you're a center. We're going to re-sign you. We don't care. We'll match because we don't also have to pay Drummond. And then we move forward with a very young core.
Right, like Drummond is 27, turning 28 in August, and he, like Oladipo, what we were saying earlier about, you know, free agent class is really withered out. There are still a lot of teams with cap space.
Yeah.
He is almost destined to get overpaid. So the Cavs got a get-out-of-jail-free card here because, yeah, Jared Allen's a restricted free agent, and some team might lob a huge offer sheet his way. But who would you rather... I don't think either guy gets a max contract, or I hope neither guy gets a max contract. But, like, if you're signing one guy to the same value deal, you're taking Jared Allen over Andre Drummond, right?
Yes, I am. Jared Allen is legitimately good. I think when people look at his stats, they have a negative reaction. And I think that's wrong because he was never given the right offensive role. And he's underrated defensively, I think. He's a great rebounder, especially on a per-minute basis. And I think if you give him a larger offensive responsibility, not saying he should be, like, you know, a top-two guy on a team, but if you just involve him a little bit more and you don't just solely exclusively use him as a lob threat and as a garbage man, like, set up mid-rangers for him here and there, maybe get him the occasional three, just try to utilize his skill set a little bit more. I think there's a player in there that next year is going to show everyone that, you know what, I was kind of held back in Brooklyn. I was not given what, you know, the amount of minutes I should be getting. And I just love the fit next, you know, for him next to a second year Isaac Okoro.
Yep.
Because I have a feeling that Okoro is just going to explode next year. You know, you always have to get that first year under your belt. And then next year, good lord, that's suddenly a pretty strong starting duo in the front court. Then you have the offense taken care of Darius Garland, Colin Sexton. And if you then find just one more wing, right? Like, so you can run like the two small forwards at the forwards slot so it doesn't become like a traditional power forward kind of type.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there you go. That's your lineup. That's the one you develop. That's the one you run with.
Yeah, I mean, like, the Cavs now, I mean, Jared Allen is just much more aligned age-wise with the Sexton-Garland duo. Yep. They have Okoro. I mean, Larry Nance Jr. is older, but he's been very good this year. And I think he could actually fit pretty well next to Jared Allen long-term as well, at least for the next couple of years. And then, you know, Kevin Porter Jr. hasn't played this season. He's had some off-court issues, and it sounds like the Cavs are kind of helping him get his life back on track before he does return to the court. But, you know, for most of last year, I think the perception was that Kevin Porter Jr. had the highest upside of any of their young guys. So, like, we have to factor him into the mix as well. They have Chetty Osmond too. Like, they have very quietly assembled an intriguing young core.
Yeah.
Not to say that they're, you know, a great team yet. They're 5-7, and, you know, I think they'll be in the mix for the play-in tournament, but I don't know that they even get in there. I think there's a chance that they fall a little bit short. But, like, looking ahead, I like what they're doing in Cleveland. They are just quietly building something that's interesting.
Yeah. So they did that the last time LeBron left, and then they got Kyrie and then Dion Waiters. And we went all in on that, and the players turned out super weird.
Anthony Bennett.
Andrew Wiggins. But this feels different. This feels like, you know, these guys have their heads, you know, screwed on right. I mean, I've spoken with Colin Sexton. He's legitimately, like, easy spoken. Like, he's very mature for his age. I absolutely love him. I think there's so much there in terms of further potential because his mindset is right. Darius Garland came onto the scene this year big time. I mean, he's unfortunately out. It's only a 6-game sample, but I don't think we're going to see such a significant drop for him when he comes back that he goes back to rookie year Garland. He looks way better than that. Yeah, Cleveland, out of every team, that's one of the teams that just a couple years ago we both called irrelevant.
Yeah,
Not anymore. They are on a very, very exciting trajectory.
Yeah, I mean, Colin Sexton is averaging 25 points per game on 53% shooting, 51.6 from three.
Now, in eight games, but yeah.
Right, now, that is definitely a small sample size thing. It's going to come back. But, I mean, he's, you know, his first year he shot 40.2. Last year he shot 38. So it's on low volume. It's only around four attempts per game, but I think it seems to be sustainable. And as you said, Garland's taken a big leap this year too. I just really like what these Cavs are doing. And I have no idea how they turned a late first into an Exum who is always hurt, and you can't bank on him anymore. Turning that into two rotation players, at least one of whom should be a part of your long-term future, that's just great work.
Yeah.
I love it.
Like, and money, by the way? Don't they have cap space?
Probably. I would think, because Drummond's expired. Like, you know, Kevin Love is still hanging on their books, but other than that, Larry Nance isn't expensive.
No, they have a ton. So they could actually go in and find young players flying under the radar, maybe overpay for someone in restricted free agency. Oh boy. Are we thinking the same name here? John Collins? Yeah. You and I have podcasted together for 5 years. We have, like, we both go, oh boy, and we both go John Collins. You and I spend way too much time if we get together. But John Collins, I mean, he's a traditional power forward, which I'm not a super big fan of, but, like, in the context of it, like, Jared Allen at center, John Collins at the four, Isaac Okoro at the three, you know, interchangeable Collins, Sexton, Darius Garland at the guards. I mean, that's not bad, right? And then you have an additional draft pick coming in, presumably in the lottery if they miss the playoffs?
Right. Yeah, and all of those guys are in the same age range. It just makes... Right? Yeah. Yeah, Cleveland is definitely a team to keep an eye on. Like, they're not going to get the national attention this year because they're just kind of in that East also-ran mix.
Right.
But, like, they are very quietly building something that I think could lead to sustainable long-term success.
Yeah, I would agree.
Let's hit Indiana, Mort, because they've been off to a great start. I mean, we talked about them, I think, an episode or two, last episode, I think, mm-hmm. about like whether to buy into them as, you know, as a legit hot start that is going to sustain.
Right.
I thought they were, and Oladipo, as we said earlier, has been playing really well, but he's now in Houston, and they have Caris LeVert in his place. So how do you see LeVert fitting into, I don't know that he's going to be in the exact Oladipo role, but how do you see him fitting with this Sabonis, Turner, Brogdon core?
Well, they must have heard the last podcast, because remember when I said they didn't have a whole lot of creative shot makers, and I was a little bit afraid that they would be, that they were a little bit too robotic in their offensive versatility? Enter Caris LeVert, man.
Yeah.
Who is the exact opposite. He is one of those, you know, quote-unquote weird shot makers, very much like TJ Warren is. So next year is going to be super fun. Both of them going to take shots that we could just go, no. Oh, wow. Great. Like, clap. I like the addition just in terms of his unpredictability. That's the word, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Just in terms of ball handling, like, he's a pretty good ball handler. He can get into the teeth of the defense. He can make plays. He can shoot off the bounce. He can shoot as a spot-up guy. I like the flow of it. What I think I want to see in Indiana before I'm all in is him getting a lesser role than he did in Brooklyn, and play where he plays under certain restrictions, so he isn't as inclined to play outside the offense. So I still want Sabonis and Brogdon to be like the number two, you know, the top two guys. Like those guys have to be the primary shot takers. They have to be the primary decision makers. And then you can throw Caris LeVert into the mix. Like, he has to be their third guy. And it has to be in a way where it makes sense. So you don't give him the ball and just go, hey, everyone get the hell out of the way. Like, right. No, he plays within a structure. That's what I want to see. But ultimately, just by not having Depot there anymore, which of course is unfortunate, I think I might have a slight hot take here, because that means that Malcolm Brogdon is going to get more defensive responsibilities. It also means that Brogdon is going to have more playmaking responsibilities. And it also means that Brogdon is going to have more scoring responsibilities. I mean, we're looking at a guy who, if the Pacers keep up their, you know, their current winning percentage, and if they keep winning throughout, we're looking at a guy who could be at the cusp of an All-NBA first team.
Whoa!
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
No, that's, but no.
I thought you were going to say All-Star, and I was going to agree with that. All-NBA third team.
No. Listen. If you are, let's say that the Pacers finish with, like, what, a top five record in the East, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which is very, like, likely. I mean, I'm not ruling that out whatsoever. And if he is their primary scorer, their primary playmaker, and their best perimeter defender, which he, like, let me just go over that roster real quick. He will be. Why not?
I mean, honestly, the All-NBA teams this year are probably going to be decided on who had to quarantine the least, so I guess it's that.
No, but if you look at his numbers. Look at his numbers as well.
Yeah, I know.
And even go down to his, like, his advanced. Look at his turnover percentage. If that becomes sustainable, and his efficiency, and his defensive understanding, and, like, I'm the all-star, absolutely. I think if he just keeps his current production up, all-star.
Yeah.
But if he builds just a little bit more to it, which he now can because he's going to get more responsibility, I'm just not ruling out that he's a guy we could talk about as an All-NBA third team candidate.
Okay, that's fair. Yeah, I mean, I think I'm optimistic about how this trade works out for Indiana as well. If only because Oladipo was certainly to walk after this year.
Right.
Like, he's made pretty clear that he wanted to go to a bigger market or just a team that he thought could be more of a contender, even though I think Indiana has also been, I guess I don't know if they're in that top tier. But I think they had more of a championship upside this year than they did last year, even though they largely brought back the same team. I think what I've seen out of them early this season really has intrigued me. So LeVert, I could definitely see fitting pretty well here. I think you're right to bring up his herky-jerky shot creation. And, you know, I think the offense is still going to run largely through Sabonis.
Yeah.
But that's okay, because LeVert doesn't need the ball in his hands all the time to be effective. I think, you know, he's going to – having guys like Sabonis, you could create some really interesting two-man dribble handoff actions where you're getting LeVert downhill to the rim, and he's going to – you know, he's pretty good at drawing free throws, if memory serves correctly. I guess, actually, not so far this year, but, you know, minutes.
LeVert?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's okay. He's not super at it.
He's not great at the line, I guess, is the bigger concern.
Right.
He's only 71.1% career. I'm optimistic about it. I think, again, it comes down to their ceiling is much lower until TJ Warren returns, but you know, a top six of Sabonis, Brogdon, Turner, LeVert, Warren, and then Jeremy Lamb when he returns. But in the meantime, the Holiday brothers, you got Doug McDermott, TJ McConnell is here as well. Like, that's a really good rotation. Maybe the Pacers are just what they always are, like a really annoying, tough, good regular season team, and then the playoffs come around and they just don't have that top end talent to win, go deep into the playoffs. But I don't know. I mean, I like, if they're the 4 or the 5 seed this year, I wouldn't be psyched about playing them in the first round.
No, I wouldn't either. They're disciplined also, like, just in the way that they play, and that's also going to help LeVert. Like, LeVert has not been a high efficiency player for the past, let me see, actually since his rookie year, he's not been high efficiency. So for him to come into a team where that is basically taken care of, I mean, the Pacers team ranks 8th in the league in effective field goal percentage, for example. I mean, they're just smart shot takers. So I hope that drops off on him to the extent that he suddenly becomes an, you know, additional efficiency player for him. I just like what they're doing. I really do. They play both ends of the court. Even guys who, like Sabonis, who doesn't necessarily have the greatest defensive instincts necessarily, like, you just kind of seem to be finding a way every single game to not make that a problem. So
yeah,
if you have that ability, you are eventually going to do something right in the playoffs in terms of just beating someone who's off their game, and you're going to make it, you know, further. I like what they're doing. I still think they need that number one guy, but so far, it doesn't seem like that's been a problem for them.
Yeah, I agree. So, Moore, do you want to wrap up quickly with the Sixers, since they were the other team? I mean, hell, for most of Wednesday, it seemed like they were going to get James Harden. Like, the leaks coming out from Stein in particular made it seem like it was a foregone conclusion, and they were just kind of negotiating over the details, and then Shams dropped it a couple minutes later, then the Nets pulled it off. We don't know exactly how much the Rockets requested from the Sixers. We, you know, bits and pieces, Simmons, Maxey, Thybulle. We don't know how many picks they wanted.
Right.
But do you think the Sixers screwed up by not meeting whatever the asking price was?
No. Look, I mean, we already touched on the fact that this was probably too much to relinquish from the Nets' point of view. So it depends on, you know, obviously, just the inclusion of Simmons wouldn't have necessitated as many draft picks to come in, obviously. But I cannot imagine that the deal was solely Simmons and Maxey, right?
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like Stein reported, initially he reported that the Sixers, or the Rockets wanted Maxey and Simmons, and then like later he said the Sixers were trying to get additional draft assets,
right,
so they didn't have to include Maxey. And when I saw that report, I was like, additional draft assets?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
they have most of their picks already. They, you know, they gave up a lightly protected 2025 first to OKC in the Al Horford trade. But that's where I was like, what? How much is Houston asking for here?
Exactly. And, like, I would even, this, I don't know if this is, this, you know, if I'm being naive or I'm just being dumb in terms of trade value or I'm just being a hardened hater or whatever, or a maxi lover. That's probably more correctly.
Oh, wow.
I wouldn't,
are you going where I think you're going?
I wouldn't have given up Ben Simmons and Tyrese Maxey. Like in a package.
Without any picks, just Simmons and Maxey for Harden, you wouldn't have done.
See, that's the thing. I that's my first inclination. I don't think I would do it because I think Tyrese Maxey has so much potential in his bag where I go, he's already playing well now. If you just keep him around for a year or two, he's going to develop into like a full-time starter, and maybe just because of the way he plays defense, he could become, you know, a fringe all-star, which is really what you need. Like, you need one more guy, and if you can get that guy organically, like from your own system, why would you want to give up Ben and that guy for Harden? Because you would fall short. You would need talent afterwards. It would be Harden, Embiid, it would be Seth Curry, and it would be Tobias Harris. And those are great pieces, and you could go really far, but I don't know. I would still feel I would give up a ton there. But I might also just be overreacting to Tyrese Maxey's initial success with the Sixers. Mm-hmm. I just think he's looked very, very confident and very, very comfortable in the NBA. To the point where I'm going, this guy, you know, by next year could be a full-time starter, and he has all-star potential. And you know me, I like the young guys. I like potential, and I might be overrating him. But when I saw that report, Ben Simmons and Tyrese Maxey, I was like, I could get behind like Ben Simmons and a draft pick, like Ben Simmons, Matisse Thybulle, and like a draft pick. But Max, the inclusion of Maxey was pretty big. I think that was one where I was like at least considering it. Now, if you were telling me that the deal was Ben Simmons, Tyrese Maxey, and even more like first rounders, then that's an absolute definitive no way in hell that I do.
Yeah, I will say most of Sixers Twitter seemed more upset that Maxey was involved in these talks than Ben Simmons. Should tell you about where both guys stand right now. But yeah, I mean, I'm with you. If it was Simmons and Maxey for Harden, I would have done it. If that was it, I would have done it.
Okay.
But I mean, this is what I kept coming back to since the minute the minute that Harden expanded his trade destination list and included Philly, and you know, there were reports that Simmons was in the talks. Morey said he wasn't. That was an obvious lie. Of course he was. They don't have the assets otherwise to get him. Like, Tobias and Maxey was not getting James Harden. Tobias, right. Maxey, and a million picks.
That deal I would have James done, Harden. Just to clarify.
Yeah, yeah, right. So that was not happening. But I just don't feel the rush to break the Simmons Embiid thing
up. Yeah.
Especially, it's a, you know, the first year under Doc Rivers. I'm with you. Like, what we've seen out of Simmons so far this year has been disappointing. I think it's fair to say.
Offensively.
Especially
offensively.
Yeah, yeah. Right. Offensive. Right. Especially, I mean, coming off, they played a very shorthanded Heat team on Tuesday night, and Simmons was just abysmal. And it was like, if that is the worst possible time for you to have that type of game, knowing what James Harden was going to do after and knowing how quickly these talks were going to escalate, like, that is a bad last impression to leave.
Mm-hmm.
But I still think that, you know, they just need more time to figure out, you know, under this new system,
right?
Can Ben and Joe, with these shooters who we haven't seen in a week because Seth Curry got COVID and half the team got quarantined, can they... You know, they looked really good to start the year, and it was against bad teams. So I don't want to jump to conclusions, but I would like to see them with more time in the system against good teams, and then we can have a more definitive picture of, was it a Brett Brown thing, or like, are these guys just not compatible? Is Simmons not going to take that offensive leap that we think he could? And if that's the case, okay, then we can move him. But you know, Embiid is signed through, I believe, 2022-23. This is the first year, I believe, of Ben Simmons' 5-year max extension.
Yep.
Like, there's just not immediate pressure to break this thing up? Because if we know one thing about the NBA, is that the next disgruntled star is always right around the corner. Like, just because James Harden forced his way out and is no longer on the market doesn't mean that Bradley Beal in 2 months is going to look at the Wizards, look at Russell Westbrook, look at Thomas Bryant out for the year with a torn ACL, realize we are going absolutely nowhere, and despite pledging his loyalty to Washington over and over again, he's probably going to start looking and be like, I don't know that I want my ceiling to be the play-in tournament for the next 3 years.
Yeah, exactly.
And if not Beal, someone else very well might. Like, Seth I think Green? If you're... Yeah, sure, yeah. I mean, if you're trading Simmons, you're getting more than Zach LaVine back,
of
I think.
Of course you are. Like, that's not a deal to be made there. It's... Yeah, you're not trading Ben Simmons for it. But I'm just piggybacking off your point in terms of there's always going to be a high-caliber player available at some point that you can get and like for cheaper than Harden, apparently.
Yeah, exactly. I just think the price of star trades has gotten so distorted in recent years. Like, it started with the AD trade, I think.
Right.
And then Kawhi... Or not Kawhi. Kawhi's the exception.
Yeah.
But Paul George and then getting Kawhi to the Clippers and now the Drew trade as well.
Hell
and
even all Westbrook.
Yeah.
Westbrook fetched 4 first-rounders. That's, you know, just to wrap up the LaVine thought, that's actually why I was like spitballing earlier a couple months back when we were talking, like, maybe now's the time the Bulls should trade LaVine because, you know, when I see trade proposals flown around on Twitter, it's like, well, maybe we give up a top 20 protected for Zach LaVine. Like, look, have you seen the rate, like, good offensive players are going for right now? Are you going to tell me that the Bulls couldn't fetch 3 first-rounders for Zach LaVine right now? Like,
I think all of the teams that acquired those stars had reasons to do so. You know,
right.
Lakers were under immediate pressure with LeBron, and they were confident that AD could re-sign. Clippers knew if you get Paul George, you're also getting Kawhi, so you're basically trading 5 firsts for 2 superstars, not one. Milwaukee needed Giannis to sign that Supermax and did not give a damn. They said, if we get him to re-sign, those picks are going to be relatively worthless anyway.
Yeah.
Fine. And even Brooklyn, we have KD, we have Kyrie for 2 years. We're in win now mode. Let's just push it to championship or bust.
Mm-hmm.
Got it. But it just feels like, I don't know. I mean, I look it back at what the Raptors gave up for Kawhi. DeMar DeRozan, Jakob Poeltl, and a top 20 protected first round pick for Kawhi and Danny Green.
Yeah. Well, to be fair, Kawhi had come off a very weird injury. You really didn't know where he was, so that affected his trade value. But your point still stands. I just wanted to include it.
Yeah, yeah. And, I mean, DeMar DeRozan, with all due respect, is a very good player. He was coming off 4 All-Star appearances in the last 5 years.
Right.
But, like, if you're trading a player of that caliber, of a DeRozan or of a Ben Simmons, like, I don't think you have to include. You know, if you're getting Kawhi Leonard for that price, all right, give up Ben Simmons, Thibault, and a pick, maybe, for a James Harden or a Bradley Beal. But I don't think you should have to include Ben Simmons, Thibault, Maxey, 3 first-round picks, 3 pick swaps. Like, I think Daryl Morey was smart to draw the line somewhere and be like, look, if Brooklyn's willing to mortgage their entire future and gamble on this, Godspeed. But I'm excited to have a front row seat to their implosion if that's what happens too.
I agree. And you know what? I want actually to dig into a little bit why I actually don't feel as though I would have done the Harden deal for Simmons and Maxey, because you actually raised a good point that I want to elaborate on in terms of no rush, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're right, because Joel Embiid is 26, right? He's not... He's about to turn 27, but I mean, that's not old. So he and Simmons are in the same wavelengths, like age-wise, and same with Tobias Harris. They have, at the very least, a 4-year window where they can win and where the team can still add pieces. Now, if you give up all the pieces that allows you to get guys back, i.e. draft picks and young guys and whatever, you're just going to lessen the options of adding to that core already. Now, at the same time, I think there's something that we're totally forgetting here, which is super relevant. If you make the Simmons for Harden trade, your defense goes into the effing tank.
Yep.
And you put so much more pressure on Joel Embiid, the defender, that you actually have to wonder what kind of energy will he have left to produce offensively? Because where do you pick up that defense from there? And then you go, well, Matisse Thybulle. No, I love Matisse. I really do. But he's no Ben Simmons. He's just not. We're talking about a 6'10", 240 player who's agile, athletic, explosive, versatile, can guard five effing positions. The defense would just go completely into the shitter. And I just don't see how you can get out of that. And that matters. Yeah. That totally matters if you have championship aspirations, especially in the long term. And the Sixers do.
Well, and given, I mean, again, going back to what I said earlier with Brooklyn, like given a hypothetical matchup against Milwaukee or now Brooklyn or even Boston, like Ben Simmons, you're going to put on LeBron or Kawhi or KD or Jason Tatum.
Yeah.
Like, take out Ben Simmons from the equation and you just don't have that elite lockdown wing stopper. Yeah, I mean, I understand the argument for doing this kind of a deal. Yeah. In a vacuum, like trading Simmons for Harden, because, like, yes, pairing an elite offensive player with an elite defensive player in Joel Embiid. And Joel Embiid, you know, came into this season in shape, motivated. He's looked like an MVP candidate so far. So you don't want to waste this season from him. I get it.
Yeah.
But, you know, again, we don't know the exact asking price. But I want to end on this. It's like, no one in the NBA appreciates James Harden more than Daryl Morey.
Right.
Daryl Morey spent the last 8 years, he took out a full-page ad in the paper when he left Houston and, like, dedicated a whole paragraph just to how effing good James Harden is. The fact that he had a price that he wouldn't go to speaks volumes to me.
Yeah, I totally agree. I totally agree. And that's why they were the expected destination. It was the whole Morey thing and, like, the reuniting of those two, for him to say, you know what, I'm good. That says it all, I think. And, people are going to come after us for being down on Harden. It's not that. He is obviously fantastic. Like, it seems like people are just so blind as to the realities of the situation. And that's what bothers me. That's why I did the piece yesterday on Forbes, where I aligned, like, his trade value compared to Bradley Beal and basically made the argument that Beal should be the guy you trade for, because he's just so easier to incorporate. And you brought it up earlier with what Seth Partnow said. You have to build around Harden. You have to, like, he has to be the alpha and omega offensively, and he provides you nothing defensively. He's already 31. He's closing in on almost 35 career minutes. Like, there's just so many bad signs here. And then the fact that he's also, I mean, we got to mention it, and I think it's worth mentioning, the fact that he acted so immaturely at the age of 31, that sure as hell isn't going to, you know, make anyone feel safer in their choice about acquiring him. Like, he acted like an 8-year-old.
Right. Right. So, I mean, I think, correctly, you focus on the upside in a deal like this. But I do think, I mean, a general manager also has to focus on the potential downside. And I think there has been a little too much focus on the upside of a hypothetical Harden acquisition in general, and not enough on the potential downside of, okay, but what if this thing doesn't, like, given the cost it's going to take to get him, given his age, given how many minutes he's played, given the concerns about will he fit next to another ball-dominant star in Brooklyn's case, too, is it worth that massive price to get him? We'll find out.
I mean, we will. We definitely will. And again, I hope I'm wrong.
Yeah, me too. Me too. So I think that's a good place for us to wrap up, Mort. Thank you all, as always, for listening. Hope you're doing well, staying safe out there. Yep. Please follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bio, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. We are being hosted on Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. And thanks for listening to our live show on Locker Room. If you liked our show, please be sure to start your own room and engage with other fans on the app. Download the Locker Room app in the Apple App Store to be a part of our podcast. Also, remember to use the code NBAPOD at manscaped.com to get 20% off and free shipping. That is 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com and use the code NBAPOD. Until next time, I'm Brian Toporek, and I was joined, as always, by Morten Jensen. Have a good one, Mort.
You too, man. Don't die.